Jim is wearing his heels, marching around the town to get some thrills, but it's time to go in now.
On this episode, I'm joined by an Olympic medalist. Unbelievable story. It's wild. It's the great Niall Wilson. Niall, brilliant to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Jim.
Amazing, like really, really good. And we were just talking before about how I saw you, which was a TED Talk of all things. You know, I do listen and watch TED Talks. I think it's important.
Yeah, yeah.
And you popped up as the algorithm works on YouTube. And the way that you delivered it was amazing. But I thought your story was unbelievable. So the fact that you got back in contact and said, mate, I'm keen to come on at some point, we've made it happen, is amazing. So,
absolute pleasure, mate. I'm excited.
Class. We've both got nosebleeds because we're in London, so we're a long way from up north in Leeds.
I'm already twitching from missing.
I know, yeah, but it's class. Maybe just for the listeners, I always say this, but I'd rather you kind of give a snapshot of your journey and your career as opposed to me talk for you, and then we can just...
Yeah.
Go from there.
Okay. So, yes, ex-gymnast, started gymnastics when I was 4 years old. The reason I was super clumsy, I have four scars on my head, split my head up. And as a kid, so my parents said they took me to learn how to fall or have some body awareness and spatial awareness. And then with gymnastics, it's a sport where your physiology is important. So I ticked those boxes. I was small, I was light, I was strong. My parents are super small, so I'm only... unfortunately 5'6", but that was always going to be an advantage. But then I think you need a bit of what's between the ears, a bit of a screw loose, absolutely no fear. And I guess I had all of those things, but I just remember loving it. You know, you always hear now, because we're running four gymnastics clubs now, which is super exciting. I'm sure we'll talk about it. You know, the parents like, oh, he wants to go to the Olympics, wants to the Olympics. And, you know, it's such an unbelievable dream and goal. And I certainly had that. The realism that's going to be the reality is so slim. And I don't really ever remember thinking, yeah, that's it. Like I'm going to be, I remember watching it on the telly and thinking, wow. But if I think back to my early years, I was just obsessed and addicted to gymnastics. That's all I remember. And I couldn't wait to get there every day and learn the next trick. And fortunately, I was one of those people at 18 years old. I sort of springboarded myself onto the senior team by becoming junior European champion that year and then going straight to the Glasgow Commonwealth Games and won four medals. So it all happened really quickly. And then it's unusual at so young, you make the games. So 2 years later in Rio, I was 20 years old. Yeah, made the team and went and won bronze on high bar. So unbelievable career in gymnastics. And then I guess... fast forward a little bit, whilst I was on that journey, I loved making videos and I was quite creative. From a kid, you can go back and YouTube them. I used to put a show reel on YouTube every year of my gymnastics tricks that I'd filmed in the gym. My parents bought me a camera for Christmas and I remember sitting for hours at the computer. So I guess I was always a bit of a YouTuber at heart, and then documented a little bit of the journey into, I called it the Road to Rio. So you can see all those old videos. Terrible, by the way. Didn't have a clue what I was doing. All my mates were looking at me like, what the fuck is he doing? Like, that's embarrassing, talking to a GoPro. Everyone's cringing. But I enjoyed it. And I sort of deep down, I thought, you know what, if I can get good at this and have a few eyeballs watching me on this journey, I'm more likely to get a sponsor. Because gymnastics isn't very marketable. And, you know, you had gymnasts and on an APA funding grant, so we was getting paid not very much to do what we loved. But then you had like a Lewis Smith at the time when I was growing up, I'm sure you've heard the name, who medaled in Beijing and then went on to medal in London and Rio. He had 10 sponsors and they were Adidas and Subway and British Airways, and I was like, what's all this about? You know, like, that's a cheat. That someone, my friend who I'm training with at the gym, he's also making a lot of money, but there was just one guy. So I thought, you know, that it was in the back of mind, this might give me a little bit of an advantage in that arena where I don't just need to rely on my grant. I could actually possibly make money elsewhere. And I'm sat here today with the huge business and 1.6 million subscribers. Did not in my wildest dreams imagine that was going to happen. I remember back in the days I was buzzing with 5,000 views on YouTube, and then 2017 was the year it all took off. I went from 10,000 to a million in just under 18 months, which was crazy. Then I guess now I'm fully retired. A couple of bad injuries, well, one specifically bad injury, sort of ended that journey, which was upsetting, and I want to talk about it. It's so, and you'll know, it's so difficult retiring, because your life is all about the sport. It's your identity, it's what you've lived for, it's your purpose. It's so simple. I wake up every day and my job is to try and become the best gymnast in the world. Then all of a sudden, that's gone. But fortunate enough that I'd built a mini little empire in during that I've you know, we're now starting to open gym clubs and try and get as many kids and adults into gymnastics as we possibly can and grow that. We've got four clubs now: Leeds, Rotherham, Coventry and Mansfield, and that's grown really well, and still doing the weird and wonderful content. And my new obsession is golf. So found a passion in that. That's kept me off the booze a little bit.
Interesting. I need a hobby. Yeah. Badly.
Podcasting's your hobby.
I know. Maybe this is the hobby and I'm being too hard on myself, but it's a really interesting sport. I sit here 6'9" with heels, one of the most unathletic humans to have ever played rugby, and I am drawn to gymnastics more than ever. I'll give you a little reason why, and I want to go further into this and show you some stuff that I've been flicking through at some point. Okay. But the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is on at the minute, and they have a number of different shows. Comedy, which I love. I spoke to you about that. Music, which is great. But the Cirque du Soleil shows, the Cirque shows, I'm watching these, and I've been to see three this year. I saw the same one last year, the same one the year before. Mm-hmm. These gymnasts, these athletes, because everyone talks about the ultimate athletes, like what is that? Like NFL is the most watched sport, NBA, like freak athletes because of their height, their speed, football, ridiculous amounts of money, UFC, boxing.
Yeah,
I'm looking at these athletes doing the Cirque du Soleil, and they are former gymnasts or
acrobats. Yeah.
It blows my mind, the athleticism and the strength, the accuracy, the bravery watching it. And maybe it's my age, because I don't know, whatever, like the music that comes with it. Mm-hmm. I'm drawn to it. And again, like doubling down on looking at your stuff and seeing your stuff, I think many people are looking at this now, and other sports are drawn to gymnasts. And my lad's 12 starting on rugby, and he's going to be tall and rangy, hopefully significantly quicker than me. And I'm like, mate, you need to get into some kind of gymnastic athletic movement.
100%.
It's an unbelievable sport.
I always say every kid should do it, not to be a gymnast, it puts you five steps ahead in terms of your body awareness to be able to do anything else. And that doesn't even necessarily mean in sport, just moving day to day. It sounds strange, but you know where your body is from head to foot because of the skills and the fundamentals that you then step by step go through. Your core strength and your mobility is tenfold better than people that don't do gymnastics, which helps in every other sport. It does if you're more mobile. Like I always say, I mean, this might connect to you. I've never in my 20 years of gymnastics known a gymnast to pull a hammer. And arguably we're putting just as much force through our lower body and legs as rugby players and footballers. I arguably more. When we're coming down from the high bar, our rings are 2.8 meters off the ground. When we dismount, we then go higher, so say 3 meters off the ground. Somersault in the air and landing is roughly 3 to 5 times body weight, the force. But because of that, it sort of trumps physics when everyone says you can't be strong and flexible at the same time. It's just nonsense. Like muscular tissues health is just second to none.
Tendon strength.
Everything. Mm. And it's all those little tiny little muscles that the stabilizers that you just don't know are there. You know, you've got pecs, biceps, triceps, but how do you hold yourself up in the rings with straight arms without moving your body? There's so much more to the physiology, I guess. But I think it's the best sport in the world, and everyone should do it in some way, shape or form. Maybe to go on a journey like I have, because it is super. The thing about it as well is the technicalities and the skill learning. Everyone, to an extent, can run, they can kick a ball, they can ride a bike. You can connect with that, those sorts of sports. Obviously, the top level is, you know, it's next level shit. Mm. But not everybody off the street can do what we do. And I'm not just learning a backflip, I'm learning tricks and skills on six pieces of apparatus, which is what drew me in. Like, every day was different. I was learning something new from the age of sort of 8, 9, 10. And, you know, a lot of it is physical prep. You have to do a hell of a lot of conditioning and strength work and put yourself through a lot of pain. But sort of when you tick those boxes and they're in daily, you just get to learn loads of tricks. For years, it was just I was so obsessed. It was so fun. But yeah, Cirque, the stuff that they're doing and then continuing to innovate, what's physically possible for the human body just blows my mind.
Yeah.
And it's a spectacular show. And it's interesting, actually, because gymnastics as a sport is not marketable at all. There's zero financial gain, really. You know, it's nowhere near mainstream media. However, you've got a company, an entity like Cirque du Soleil, which I'd probably liken it a little bit to the UFC, where it sells out every night.
Yeah, the brand's so strong.
It sells out every night. Multi billion dollar. It's captivating, you know, acrobatics and gymnastics and athleticism in a certain way that's marketable. So it's like, I'd love to be a part of this journey. Where can the sport shift to maybe go more towards mainstream? Because I know what me and my mates had to go through, and the hours in the gym, the blood, sweat and tears. But to be honest, very little reward. It's sort of still seen as a bit of it. You're doing your hobby.
Mm.
That's your hobby, and you have to have this dream to go to the Olympics, and there's no way you're going to be a superstar in the making and from it. And most of, you know, my retired mates that did the games with me had to go back to uni and have got 9-to-5 jobs in their family business. And it's just like how can we move the sport forward so that it's sort of more towards Cirque du Soleil?
Well, you were ahead of the game because of content. Yeah. Like, that's why. You could see it. And I think now when people are looking at things with a short attention span, like social media, cultural relevancy, like all these things, I'm sure many people are the same as me when they look at stuff. It's like if you go and watch someone sing, or you go and watch a band, or you go and watch a comedian, we were talking about how hard comedy is, or you go and watch someone speak or whatever. It's because most people can't do them things. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the athleticism of gymnastics or these Cirque du Soleil, me personally, I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
No one can, 99% of people cannot do that, cannot hold themselves up on rings, cannot do flips and somersaults. I just think it looks so cool.
Yeah, well, thank you. It does, but you're right, social media accelerated that whole process.
With a bit of music as well. You had a bit of music. It sounds really cool.
It sounds a bit of a filter. But I remember when Insta became a thing, and YouTube, I was doing, you know, I was making my show reels, but I think it impacted the sport in a positive way. Everyone was doing bigger and better, but I remember me and the lads, they'll all agree, you were doing tricks now in the gym and wanted to learn the new skill for the gram, and you'd film it. Like, but back in the day, you won't film anything, would you? You have your coach watching you, how it looks, give you some pointers, and you'd learn the tricks. Like, now, I wanted to learn a casino, which is the hardest skill on the high bar, so that I could post it on the Instagram. Then all of a sudden, you start seeing younger kids, videos of younger kids doing the skills that I can't even do, and it's been plastered all over Instagram. So I just feel like this whirlwind tidal wave of media, everyone's got access to seeing what everyone else is doing, I think pushed on the sport massively. And in terms of the degree of difficulty that's been performed now is just out of this world, and it's just making it more of a spectacular viewing sport.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shall I show you what I've been looking at? This isn't my iPad. This is the studio iPad.
Jim.
Here he is. African Kings. I can't pronounce his name. Arseni Natural Muscle Monster.
Okay.
No weightlifting. Only body weight.
Agreed.
Look.
Here, here.
Do you recognise him or not?
No, I've not seen him. Is his strength about to blow my mind?
I have never seen anything like this bloke in my life. Right, so there he's doing knee tucks. I can do them.
Really?
I can, these are scissor kicks. I can do them. Look at the shape on him. You wait. So he's building the scene.
It's a different sort of body type as well, isn't it? You know, a gymnast structure.
Look at the flips.
Yeah.
Can you do that?
No.
Not that.
I won't be doing it on concrete either.
He is in a car park. He's got the bars. Look at that.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit.
He's on concrete as well. It's not good for the joints, mate.
But it's good for the gram.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Look at the strength.
Yeah.
He's holding himself from a bar. You'll have to go to video to watch this, but...
Yeah, it's so impressive, man.
Now, if that is not one of the greatest athletes walking this planet, he's walking on his hands.
I love this debate. So what are you saying gymnasts are in the pole? Did you say the ultimate athlete?
Yes, I would. Yeah. I had to pause slightly because it's... As in, what is gymnastics? Yeah. I know there's a wider scale around it.
Yeah.
But in terms of like power, movement, and transferable, transferable things into like life because you have to move around. Yeah. And I'm so rigid and so stiff. And I go back to my time as a rugby player.
Yeah.
If only I could get into certain positions, if only I could run smoother. Mm-hmm. And that's what I say to the kids. Any kids now, like I was at an event at the weekend and similar conversation, the parents will say, oh, I want my lad to be a professional rugby player. And I'm like, well, the chances are that probably isn't going to happen in terms of...
Do you tell them that? I
kind of do say that because you can see like they're putting pressure,
for sure,
on their kids.
And I think just
said,
a good
like,
thing.
Yeah, like you need, and it's a contact sport.
Yeah,
but and they just said if you've got any advice, I'd be like, obviously the skills like catching, passing, kicking. I was like, you have to be athletic.
Yeah,
and what does that mean? Like you don't need to be a bodybuilder. You don't need to be this and that. You need to be able to move.
Yeah,
like rugby's about different positions and getting out of positions and gymnastics.
I agree. Obviously, I'm biased. The thing that what interests me is I've done a hell of a lot of content on YouTube and started this series like Gymnast Tries. There's three of us, me and my two mates. We live together a period of time. We do content together. You might have seen them. They're called Luke and Ash, and they used to do gymnastics for me as a kid. Great personalities. They make the videos better. We all have a laugh. But specifically, me and Ashley was on the top Olympic squad. Luke was a very talented gymnast and sort of stopped when he went to uni at about 18. The three of us have tried loads and loads of different sports, and it's great because we're competitive. So like once one of us does something ridiculous, then we all have to do it. Like we all three of us backflip BMXs, mate, within 10 minutes, which is ridiculous. But this is what I'm saying is out of every sport we've done and being with a coach, they're just completely blown away as the speed that we can pick it up, how we've completely no fear, how our brains can connect with our bodies and work out a certain movement very, very quickly. You know, I performed on this year's ITV's Dancing on Ice. Mm. That to me it just painted a picture of exactly what we're saying. Because
have you ever been on?
Never been on the ice. I went as a kid, like everybody else.
Yeah,
went round. I could skate round on my feet. That was it. And I tried to on the show just go through a journey and be really humble because I am and just say, look, this is my process. But I knew, and now I've finished it, like you watch it, I was clearly so much further ahead at skating. And I put it's because of gymnastics. Everyone kept asking me, is it an advantage? Of course it is, because I know where my body is. And when coach says, can you think about putting this here and the feel is this, I just went, right, yeah, do it, done. And then also the zero fear of falling over, because this is something I overlooked for a lot of years. I would just send anything on the ice because I knew when I fell, which by the way, I fell more than anyone on that show, but because I was trying bigger tricks and because I wanted to, but then also I knew how to fall over.
I wish I knew it back in the day. I thought it was a girls' sport. That was how positioned. Yeah. You know, like that's what it was. It was just, and not just in rugby. I grew up in Coventry in the Midlands. It was like football. Imagine me going to a fucking gymnastic club being like, here I am.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd think it would be like leotards and like ballet shoes. Like that was it. It was just a cultural like shift.
It is. It was and it is. It still is. I got bullied at school for doing a girls' sport. I'm super proud. It's now the opposite, innit? Like, look at that video, that guy, you know, that's the con. It's cool to be a gymnast.
To move like that.
It's cool, man, which is really good for young lads. And I'm still passionate about getting them into it because about all the things that I've explained, how much it teaches you more. But I always said I got bullied at school until I did a backflip. But then the bully would not stop asking me to do a backflip because they were so buzzing of how cool it was and they wished they could do it. So it's like if those that are going through that now still, which it's still there. And don't get me wrong, you know, an arena would fill, you know, the O2 arena would fill from the bottom to the top for a women's gymnastics comp versus the men's. It's still not quite there. Yeah, and the sport's different, but it's certainly a lot cooler now to be a male and be able to do some tricks, gymnastics, and be shredded and have six packs, you know what I mean?
I'm so jealous. I am.
I'd love to be a little bit taller and more handsome.
Yeah. You say, I'll take the handsome bit. the tall, mate, life is not built for people my size. I've just turned 40, and it's not an identity crisis, but I'm losing a bit of weight. Like I've been doing, I feel embarrassed saying this in front of you, but I've given myself a challenge every day, which is to do 100 press-ups, 100 sit-ups, and 100 bodyweight squats. I train every day. Like I do heavy weights, but almost like something where there's a bit of discipline to my day. So I get up in the morning, and before I have a coffee, love a coffee, got a lovely coffee machine. Everything's too easy.
Yeah.
My life's too easy. So I'm like, I want to make it more difficult. Fucking hell. Doing 100 press-ups or trying to. I'm on my knees doing it. I'm happy. I'm being honest. I could say that I'm not. I could say that I'm banging out 100 press-ups.
How many goes does it take you at the moment?
I'll do it in sets of 25, 30.
That's still pretty good, though.
And then I'll do weighted squats and sit-ups are fine. But I've had 4 shoulder reconstructions, elbows, and wrists. Yeah. This is my excuse.
Yeah.
But I want to get to a point where I can just bang out 100 press-ups. You know, the abs start popping through. And the wife loves me again.
Love it, bro.
But you're... Again, just on the content, now, YouTube's a great platform, isn't it? Like, we were talking about the kids now, whether or not they should be, I don't know if there's an age thing on it. 1.58 million subscribers.
Crazy.
And you can monetize that. So that's a business, effectively, once you get to that point, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, well, look, like I said, I didn't really expect this to take off and happen, but I quickly learned that prior to that, of me taking off on the platform, I guess I was just creating videos to cater to gymnasts and help gymnasts and tell my story in a way because I thought it might be quite interesting for people to see what we were doing, you know, on the Olympic squad or whatever. I went viral and then realised that this has gone mental because it's not necessarily me teaching someone how to do gymnastics because it's entertaining and people can find inspiration and feel something from it and laugh. And I just copied what I did. That took off and just accidentally fell on my feet and just like everything I do, became obsessed with it, studied it and became a good YouTuber and knew how to make a good sort of 10-minute video that was captivating, engaging and was really cool. Like, you know, I was using my asset, which was the gymnastics that I'd learned all the years. And there's so many weird and wonderful things you can do from a content perspective that looks cool. But then I realized it wants to be relatable. I always tell this story, but I would post on Instagram, for instance, my high bar routine, which I did in the Olympic Games in training. Unbelievable. I trained my whole life for that. And it'd get 1,000 likes, whatever. I'd post the video of me doing, I'll probably be able to find it, a backflip into some underpants or to some shorts where the two mates are holding the shorts, just do a flip and land in the shorts. It looks sick. And that'd get 100,000 likes and 10 million views. So it's like, right, okay. You know, you can't connect with my high bar routine. You've no idea what the hell, whether it's good, bad, not, whatever. It's just so technical. But you all know how to get dressed. you've all seen a backflip before, which everyone wishes they could do a backflip. So that's why I connect to. It's like, oh, hold a minute here. This content game and this gathering attention's not about what I've done in the gym my whole life. This is a specific thing that I need to get good at and learn the game and find out what gets people attention and what doesn't. And I loved it and became good at making YouTube videos, mate. And it changed my life, by the way. Completely changed my life. Went from earning, you know, not a lot of money to that it seemed to times by 10 in the matter of months when it was all going crazy. And, you know, when I talked about if I just got a little bit more views, maybe I'd get one sponsor. They were knocking at the door, mate. I had 5 sponsors, the Adidas's, the, you know, now I'm a huge deal with Gymshark, which is super exciting. This has allowed me to retire and be amazing. All the Team GB ambassadors at the time. It was just a complete life changing. I'm so grateful.
And that's why I was desperate for you to come on, because the story is wild. I'm all in on people that just do amazing things. Mm-hmm. I just think that life is too short. And yeah, you know, when you chat to the kids or whatever, it's, oh, you know, like, what opportunities are out there? I'm like, go for one and fucking nail it. And yeah. Just be like, as good as you can be, whether or not that's an instrument, whether or not it's a language, whether or not it's sport. I always veer away from sport a bit, though, because it's a short life. So I'm like, JJ, pick up the guitar. Come on, son.
I know what you mean.
I was chatting to a mate about it, and we did a little bit of research. I want to say, you're lying again. But it was about like the top jobs or careers that people want in the world. Mm-hmm. So an actor or actress, an athlete or a musician.
Rapper, yeah.
So I'd be like musician. I'd be like, if I went to watch Marcus Mumford from the Mumford & Sons with a guitar, I mean, unbelievable, watching Red Hot Chili Peppers, Foo Fighters, like with a guitar, John Mayer. I'm like, that is fucking unreal. Mm-hmm. Like that would be number one. And then being like a DiCaprio in a movie and just all them different personas would be amazing. Or Tom Cruise.
But out of the three jobs, like we've been one of them, what do you think in terms of the how difficult those jobs are and detrimental they can be on your mental health?
Very true.
If you think about the stories that are told, I've got a story, you've got a story, like those, there's such
tragedy,
intense ways to live your existence.
Yeah.
They're the best in the world. I always find that they've got very similar traits where you have to be slightly narcissistic, you have to be self-obsessed, indulgent, like in order to become an Olympian. You have to put this one thing ahead of your life, like absolutely ahead of anything else, like relationships, family, whatever it is, having fun.
Yeah, like it's almost like sociopathic in a way. And you know what that is? That is the harsh realities of it. All them industries that I've just mentioned, everyone. Yeah. No, sorry, not everyone. I'll rephrase that.
No.
A large majority of them are mentally fucked.
Yeah.
Whether or not they became as a Bieber youngster, or have you seen Britney Spears at the minute online? Have you seen her?
I've not, no, but
she's got a fucking, she's got like a pole in her house and she's doing these like dances half naked, the poor thing. Yeah.
But as well, you've had the journey of it, but like you talked about, could you also imagine playing in front of, what was it, 100,000 people, I would say, that rush? Like then can you imagine just going home and going to bed? Like you can't do it. You're in a rugby team as well. Like the release afterwards, the chase, like the dopamine and euphoria and serotonin levels like hitting you all at once.
Yeah, your dishwasher analogy, which we'll get onto now, was the one in which I feel you. I know what that is on a lesser degree. And when people ask, they talk about the transition, right? And means something a bit different now. But like when we were retiring, it's transition out of sport or a career. You have two careers.
Into life.
I saw AP McCoy talking about it. It's like two lives. Like you have two lives. Like you're someone and then you know one, then you have to become someone again.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And and I'll let you talk about your experience there. But just from mine, I struggle to go back through my career and think. I don't have much memorabilia at home. I very rarely talk about, we have a crack on the podcast to do with Goody when we talk about rugby, but deep down, like when I'm at the stadium, I find myself when the anthems are on, or if I'm in a full stadium and I can feel that energy, I get goosebumps at that moment. I find myself getting emotional because I will never live that again. I will never have that moment of euphoria of playing a test match. So when you run out, I can't explain. I'm getting goosebumps now talking about it. So when you're in the zone and you've been in the zone and you're in that moment, that feeling, there's no other way to describe it apart from feeling more alive than you've ever felt. Like you're floating in a coliseum of people cheering and screaming and the hysteria. You feel like a fucking gladiator. That's how I imagine how they feel. Yeah.
God, mate.
And then it's gone.
Yeah.
And then it's gone. And then you're at home. And then you get, you know, that, and that's where listening to your TED Talk and you talking about that, it's like...
Just on what you just said, I cry often watching not even gymnastics. Like, just the moments, like, I'm into golf, watching them come down the 18th and hole in the putt to win and the family's there and the elation. Like, big fan of everything. The other week, the young lad that won Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Crying
Carlos,
my eyes out.
Alcaraz.
It's the first time, I'd not even watched Wimbledon. It happened, the final happened to be on, so it's there. I watched the last hour of it. I was crying my eyes out because I know what that moment's like and what it feels like. And it probably is that that bit inside of just slightly, sad that you're not going to be able to get it again. And coming to peace with that in terms with that is super, super difficult.
And I think that is why... This is me. I don't know the psychology around it, but a lot of these industries, which I'm saying to you, I want my kids to get into, they go to drugs.
Yeah.
They go to drinking.
Yeah, you try and replace or search for that in whatever it is, you know, substances.
Yeah.
You know, and I've done it all as well. And I think that journey, when you said you're somebody, then you're nobody, then you're somebody, I guess I'm in this little bit of... I'm not nobody, but that's metaphorical. I still don't really know who I am, who Niall Wilson is on this next chapter of his life. And sometimes it's easier to drink a bottle of wine on a night, do you know what I mean? Than sit with your thoughts and like positive and negative ones about who the hell and what the hell you want to do next that's going to give you that purpose and drive and passion and fire that sport did. So yeah, you know, addiction issues and challenges are rife in those three industries. And I guess the dishwasher moment that you're describing from my TED Talk is I basically just remember being home 2 days after the games. And lots of people have talked about it before, but it's something you never think about when you're on the journey, do you, really? It's like, forget all what's after. I couldn't even comprehend the life after Rio because my whole life was about the Rio Olympic Games. I used to look at the sell-by date on food and it said December 2016. I was like, that's not even a real month. Like, I can't imagine anything after this Olympics because the last 10 years has been about this moment. It's been built up to this moment. So I guess that's why the Olympic come down and every sportsman and woman and everyone... feels it. It's like the holiday blues. You go away, you have the best holiday ever, you've waited for it for months, you've worked hard for it, you're 9 to 5, you're just like, yeah. Then you've got to come back to reality. This was like on a million times scale because your whole life has been about that holiday, the Olympics, and I actually went and it way outweighed my expectations. It was the best experience, best 3 weeks of my entire life. I met people that, friends for life, that I never imagined. I won a medal. I parted the hell like the best I ever could. The following 6 days was like a stag do. We were just like top of the world. Felt like David Beckham. And then all of a sudden, I'm sat in my kitchen with my mum and dad's gone to work. Life goes on. The same channels are still on the television. So, twiddling my thumbs like, what the fuck do I do now? And then she just said, now will you just come and help me empty the dishwasher? And I just burst into tears. It was just like that hit me moment. It's like, holy shit, this is real. This is tough. This is difficult. And then for the next 12 weeks, I partied hard and drank alcohol, chased women, you know, just ran away from having to deal with that without really, I was 20 years old. I didn't know what I was doing. That was just, and if you met me in that zone, I'd have been like, yeah, life's great, because I'm still trying to chase and find this high that I've just experienced and not necessarily come back down and dealt with reality. But it's super tough. Yeah. Super tough.
I mean, so how old were you at that point?
I was 20 years old.
You were a kid.
I'm like literally a kid, mate. Yeah. Like, if I think about who I am now and what I've been through and what I think about and what's important to me, that 20-year-old lad just had no idea. Mm. And he just had a life-changing experience. Arguably, it's pretty impossible to just throw any 20-year-old lad into that environment. To cope with that is tough.
Like, people listen to this, and I've had people talk to me about it before. Yeah, but you got to do this, you got to do that. And yeah, like, that's amazing. And like, you call it luck, you need a little bit of luck along the way to be an elite athlete, but dedication, all these things that go with it. I think the issue in this kind of transition period and the mental health that comes after it, one, as men, it's a natural thing. You have ups and downs in life. That is the thing.
Yeah.
But I think when something is so deep-rooted in you as a child, I think being a child and what happens in your childhood that carries you through to adulthood, you know, into... How old are you now?
27.
27. Fuck, you're so young. You know, I'm 40 now, four kids. But that effect of childhood, man, that carries you.
For sure.
That carries you all the way through. And if it, like, how do you just switch off something then that you've been doing literally with your eyes closed from as early as you can remember?
I think as well, you got to remember as well, you're affirmated by being a winner and a performer. It's just, we're competitors. Win, great. Lose, not great. How do we win? Then all of a sudden, what am I winning now? You know, like, what? It's like, wow, you're the best gymnast in the world, man. And it's very subconscious, isn't it? You know, I like, when my ego's out, it's probably loving all those statements. It's like, yeah, tell me. But you train to perform and win. And I don't know about you, I was obsessed with winning. That's one of my biggest drivers. I just loved winning and I wanted to be the best. And then I guess in the transition and retirement, all of a sudden, you're not the winner anymore and you're not the performer anymore. You're just Niall. It's just really, really strange to come to terms with. Existing is enough. Just to come to terms with and peace with, just existing and being you and being a great person is enough without all the glory and the champion status and the performing and the adrenaline and the pressure and the, like, I thrived in all of that. So how do I now then just now exist? Sort of.
Oh, it is. And it's really interesting going to depth about it. I don't have the answers, but I feel you. Like, I know exactly what it is. And you speak to people, my mates, who are in this space. And it's almost like, I'm not saying that this is the rule, but it's almost like the ones that were really successful struggle more because their identity is heightened by, and I always think about Johnny Wilkinson. So Johnny Wilkinson dropped the goal for England in 2003. You would have been a babyish.
7 years old.
Yeah. He's known, right? Johnny Wilkinson is known for kicking the winning drop goal for England to win a World Cup. And he's so much more, like, so much more than that. Yeah. And some people would think, well, that's fucking unreal.
Yeah.
And of course it is. But for him walking down the street, he is that person, but he's not that person, is he? No. He ain't that person anymore. So what else are you? So he speaks about his struggles after sport. I've got other mates as well. You know, you have the lasting scars, not just, you know, physically, but the bones that are broken. You know, your inside are wrecked from painkillers and all these things, like the brain issues that people are struggling with from contact sports.
Yeah.
And it's a really tough place to migrate through. You know, not that we sit here doing a mental health podcast, we're not, but it's just the realities, I think, of being a young man. I can't believe 27.
27, mate.
You know, life's not even begun for people at 27, 30. You know, my brother still lives at home and he's 27. Not that, you know, you might live at home still, not that he's not done anything with his life, but so difficult in that identity piece and trying to find yourself. Like, I think there's many people listening to this would be in the same spot for sure.
I think just gratitude is one for me that I try and practice, and you mentioned it just a second ago, but it sounds really ungrateful that we're whining about having the best experiences of our lives, because we're not. And I got to check myself. It's like, yeah, but someone said to me the other day, but because I said I was struggling and still do, and I have open honest conversations, but it's like, yeah, but Niall, you you've got to do that.
Mm.
You've got to do it. You've got to feel it. That, you know, and you only get one time around this, on this rock, you know, in this lifetime. Me and you, we got to feel that. And it's like, yeah, that's sick. I'm so happy that.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, it's tough adjusting, the transitioning. And I think a lot of the time when I'm at my best, it's just me defining myself by being a good person, by being a good son, brother, friend, boyfriend, being ambitious with what we're trying to build, continually growing, looking after myself. I think you just, unfortunately, you have to work hard on maintaining good mental health. And that's with exercise, meditation, eating, sleeping, you know, limiting the amount of alcohol that I drink, for instance. You know, unfortunately, just like you have to do 100 push-ups a day to have a nice, you know, have a six pack and strong muscles and look well, you have to work hard on your brain. It's the same thing. And that's absolutely fine. And I've got a great life, great people around me. But yeah, I love having these chats because, you know, it's just a hell of a roller coaster. One week I feel on top of the world. It's like, yeah, I'm back. And I know what I need to do. I feel great. Got a great life. And then literally within hours, days, it's like, struggling here. This is a bit scary. But it's part of the journey, and you're learning, aren't you, every day?
Yeah, and talking about it. And I think being unapologetic about that is, you know, I don't open up often about it, especially on here, but that's the facts of life. It's like, no one's going to be looking at me at 40 years old, four kids, having played sport, and be like, oh, you know, I bet he's on cloud nine every single day. Like, no, that isn't life, mate. That's not how it goes. And I've got a really successful mate, uber generous, that's so successful in their given field, multi billion, and the most generous of people you've ever met, ever. Like, I've never met anyone more generous, but also so generous with their time. So when you have a conversation, and this is something that I try and be, it's great that in a podcast studio we're listening to each other and having a conversation, which is sometimes difficult in this day and age, but I'm talking to this guy, I'm not going to name him, and he's so present. He's listening to every word that you're saying. He's not trying to cut you off. He's not alphaing you. He's not one-upping you. And it's his time. And I think when you get to a level of success, and maybe this is me just kind of guessing, a level of a success, but also whether or not success is in like wealth or like your life or whatever, he takes energy from giving back to other humans.
Yeah.
You can see it. Whether or not it's like money.
Yeah.
Stone, you know. Whether or not it is that, but it's time. And I've found like some of the most successful people, you get the kind of ones that are just below like ridiculously successful, the ones that are constantly hustling, hustling, don't give a shit what they need to do along the way and who they fuck off along the way, as long as they get to where they want to get to. I'm on about the ones that are further than that.
Yeah.
It takes a special kind of human as well. And maybe that's what it is. And like with your stuff that you're doing and giving back to kids, and it's something that I'm thinking about doing, like, you know, foundations and all these different things. I think you get a lot from doing that.
100%. I think one of the quotes is, one of the most selfish things that you could do is help someone else. And what that means is, it's contradictory, but it feels good to help someone else. It makes you feel good. And I'm certainly not there. I certainly am giving back, but a person that springs to my mind is my manager, Luke Sutton. One of the most ex-professional cricketer, sober for 10 years, went to rehab, completely changed and built a new life for himself. We're so alike and been through a hell of a journey together. But what you're just describing there is him. And if he's listening to this, he knows that I love him so much, but it's just he spends disproportionately, super successful, incredible, what he's built business-wise and what he did in sport, but spends disproportionate amount of time in his day just giving to his kids, his partner, his clients, just helping other people. He's the person that most, you know, majority of people around him probably need advice would call Luke. And it's just so inspiring to see. And that's kind of what I aspire to, because I'm on the journey of, I guess, trying to give back. And I do that with my content and trying to inspire people, trying to provide and more gymnastics facilities in the UK so that more kids can get involved in the sport. But the majority of the time, going back to the conversation, I just get stuck in my head a lot. And it just, then your ego comes out and it just becomes me, I'm not happy, I need more. Do you know what I mean? So I guess that's the journey that we're all on, really.
With the gymnastics gyms that you're setting up, are they government? Are they sponsored? Like, is there any initiatives around that?
It's privately owned by ourselves and a few investors, which is super exciting. Like, look, we're trying and passionate about building a business. We want to do that, which is great. But look, there's gymnastics in the UK. There's about 1.3 million kids on waiting lists for the current clubs. The challenge is in growing that and tapping into that, which we really want to do, is staff, coaching. It's a coached sport. You know, you can go at the park with a football net and you and your mates can have a kick about. You can't do that with gymnastics because of health and safety and risk and things like that. So also the challenge is it's not necessarily a desirable job to be a gymnastics coach. Rubbish hours, not very well paid because the sport isn't necessarily well funded. But then also it doesn't cost that much. You know, it's like £7 an hour for your child to do gymnastics, which I think on the journey of us trying to build this and, you know, I arguably we're one of the biggest suppliers in the UK already with four clubs.
And what's the name of it? Just
Nylos and Gymnastics.
Oh, that's simple as that.
Simple. My pretty face on the door, pretty name on the door. But who is it that decided that, and what steps can we take to, you know, how much, you said you want your child to be a guitarist, how much are you paying for him to do guitar lessons? Probably a little bit more than £7 an hour. Right. You know, like, I value the sport more so than just learning a forward roll and a cartwheel. You're learning life skills. You're learning how to follow instruction, be disciplined, to work with other kids, to overcome something that's uncomfortable, learning a flip for the first time. You feel nervous. You do that. You feel elated. It's such an unbelievable sport. How can we go, right, now actually it's going to be £10 an hour, now it's going to be 12, now it's going to be 30, now it's going to be 14, and then you double the cost of the sport. You make the jobs more desirable because you can pay coaches more, and then we can start to build more clubs and more kids want to get into it. I guess it's just got a huge journey to go on, and our team are really passionate about being at the front of that and going, like, come on, we're going to revolutionise this sport in how it's participated. But then also maybe I'd love to have a new concept, a competitive Cirque du Soleil, you know, like tapping into the two. So it's not just, you've got the Federation of International Gymnastics, which is the rules, which are way too complicated that nobody understands, and that's why it's not mainstream. You've got the Olympic pathway, but actually can we have another thing? You know, look at CrossFit, look how commercial CrossFit is. It's ridiculous. I mean, the CrossFit athletes are unbelievable, but they can't do what we can do technically. You know, the stuff on the rings, they're good at doing a muscle up, but can you do an Azerrian Maltese and hold yourself in that position and then bounce to a crucifix position? It's like, no. So how do we make gymnastics marketable, mainstream?
Yeah, it's like
it's possible.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the fact that we're talking about it now, and I'm literally absorbing everything. It's the cultural relevancy which, again, is an easy phrase to put out there, and fighting for attention, all these things that we're talking about in rugby, because there are other sports that are just so marketable. Have you seen this bloody paddle tennis or
Paddle's
something?
Paddle's mad at the moment.
I can't believe it.
It'll be huge, yeah.
So a lad that I play with, a lad called Max Evans, talking of flips, he could do flips.
Really?
Like, he could do like a few in a row and like jump in some.
We need to get you doing a flip.
Well, we can see that. Well, I saw you with Luke and Tom Stoltman. They were meant to come in next Sunday, actually, in here, but we just couldn't make the timings work.
Luke had the world's heaviest backflip for about a minute and a half till Tom did the world's heaviest backflip, as in body weight. So Tom's 185 kilos, 186 kilos.
Massive humans. I love them.
They're great.
Great lads. Are they Gymshark athletes?
Yeah.
They are?
Yeah.
Mate, what a brand. And we'll get on to that.
So
Max Evans, his brother is Tom Evans. I'm going on a few different stories here. Tom broke his neck playing for Scotland against Wales. Said it was the best thing that ever happened to him because now he's engaged to Nicole Scherzinger. So he retired on the spot there, and now he's engaged to Nicole Scherzinger from the Pussycat Dolls.
I know, yeah.
And I sent him a voice and I said, "Don't you wish your girlfriend was that?" I was like, "Yes, my wife's hotter." That's what I say to him. But yeah, he's been doing the paddle fucking tennis for years. I was like, "What is this bollocks?" And then everyone's talking about it as well because it's fast. Like, there's a relevancy around it. And all sports are looking for that. Like rugby's looking for that as well, to try and speed up the game. And
you see it happen, don't you? Cricket's a good example. Yeah. The darts are a great example. Exactly. You know, like it's possible for all of these sports. I feel like rugby and gymnastics are quite, they're not similar sports.
But they're niche.
But yeah, it's quite, you're either into it or you're not. And you either get it or you don't. And
exactly right.
And both have the unbelievable potential. Like if you think about it, I mean, I don't want to be careful what I'm saying. To watch, technically, rugby should be way more entertaining than football because you've got 6'9" blokes on a field like beating the shit out of each other.
That's what I love about rugby. But really, we're not allowed to say that because it's like of everything that's going in, which as a non-rugby fan, that's what you would say you'd be drawn to it. So, yeah.
And you don't necessarily see the UFC or boxing apologising for...
There you go. I always use that analogy.
Do you know what I mean?
I got opened up on one.
Dana White was like, I'm really sorry about some of the health implications that this sport has.
Talking of Dana, have you seen this slap competition?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Oh my.
That's
God.
This taking off as well. Like, but who in the right mind would want to do that?
Let's get one up on YouTube.
Oh my God.
They've got things in their ears, haven't they? He's got a gum shield on this one. Fucking hell.
Look at all these brands and all that. I'm sorry, but my business brain's just
that's,
like...
That's Cowboy Cerrone as well. That's one of the best UFC fighters in the crowd. But yeah, you're right.
How is like a group of grown-ass men just slapping each other in the face?
I mean, crazy.
Have you seen death diving as well?
No.
So that's the new thing where... It's super popular in like Scandinavian countries, I think, and this full-on like world championships.
Is it where they're doing belly flops?
Yeah, so basically they jump off, like do weird stuff in the air, and I believe they... This is death diving. There you go.
I mean, that's as dangerous as it comes. Oh my word.
So it's like where they're going to... Oh my God, where they're going to belly flop, they like fold in half so the feet and the hands break water at the same time and it doesn't hurt.
You can die doing that, can't you?
Well, risk is like hitting your face like so hard from the height.
I love a story. So I was in New Zealand when I was younger for a year and there was all these young lads doing flips off the bridges.
Yeah.
So I just literally saw them do it and I bunny hopped over and I've gone down, just landed like bang, like that. Arse is killing me and I'm climbing out the rocks. Everyone's laughing their fucking head off. So I'm thinking my shorts have fallen off. No, water shot my arse. They're shit. Folding down my legs. Oh, I've got like a colonic irrigation or something.
What, like full on proper shit?
Well, yeah. as in it was out. The insides, the water had gone that far up that it is out everywhere.
Oh my God.
Never been more embarrassed in my life. Well, I have, but yeah, that power slap. Mate, these things are...
But people love it, don't they?
Yeah. It comes back to things, it's like short entertainment and stuff that most people can't do. So this Gymshark, what a story. What's the guy's name? Ben Francis. I think he's doing a podcast in here, not with me, but he's doing one in here. Cool brand as well.
Great.
Just hit the mark.
Do you know what? They're so amazing to work with as well. They sort of catapulted and just steamrolled that whole like influencer marketing wave and still are really. They're doing it properly and they're not, you know, like it became saturated for a period of time. But the athletes they've got on the roster, I'm super grateful to be a part of that are just unbelievable, but working with them as well, they're just super supportive in your own content, allow you to just, they realise that we're the ones that get our content and our story and what's worked for us in the past and that, like, you know, I think you do, when you're mixing, you'll get it with the podcast and stuff, when you're getting involved in sort of brand deals, they want things a certain way and it's just, sometimes it's like pulling your hair out, it's like, well, if we did it this way, you'd get 10 times more views because I know roughly how the platform works versus what you want. And it's like, well, whereas, you know, Gymshark just give you free rein to do whatever you want and the build, you know, in the billions now, isn't it, I guess.
Well, you can see as well. You can see with the content they do.
And the things that they're doing with the store and the culture around the brand is just phenomenal. If you go to the lifting club and the headquarters in Birmingham, just, you know, the place for all the athletes to come and train and hang out whenever they want, the staff to, I'm super, super grateful to be a part of that team. It's unbelievable.
What a cool brand. It really is.
Dream to build something like that, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them. You could have 1,000 failed businesses and just one like that takes off, yeah, and you take over the world.
And the story is so inspiring. Like he's such a lovely guy, but he was sort of built to be a billionaire. Like he can tell he's just really good at what he does, and it just so happens that it makes him a hell of a lot of money, but he's just completely not interested. You know, he's a family man, he just wears Gymshark clothes all the time, rocks up to the stuff, does his work, and you can tell he's just absolutely obsessed and in love with his baby, which is Gymshark, and rightfully so, and super inspiring to see.
So the Stortman brothers, they're Gymshark athletes, are they?
Yeah, met Luke and Tom at the lift event that Gymshark do a lot of, those sorts of events. Unbelievable guys, just really lovely humans.
Yeah.
Good crack.
Did you go up to their gym as well?
Yeah, we went up to Invergordon. Lovely little town. They sort of run it, it's great. You know, it's like everyone knows everyone in there. It's like such great guys. Went swimming the loch.
Yeah, he's big into that, isn't he?
Proper love it. You know, that's their drug, that's swimming in the cold.
He's all over that. I know.
Do you do your ice baths?
Yeah, I do cold showers and stuff like that, but I'm into all that, like hot saunas and stuff like that.
I love it, mate.
Well, that's...
I just love that idea of... I definitely feel the positive effects mentally more so than physically. I don't necessarily... I used to do it to recover as an athlete every week.
Mm.
But I just love that idea of making yourself do that. And
I saw something, and it might have been bollocks with the content that you see, but the dopamine hit is something like 4 times stronger than a line of cocaine or something like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like that, not that it's ridiculous to do that anyway, but you know what I mean, in terms of the high that you get.
I can see that. And I love it in an actual lake. It's difficult where I'm from to find one, but you know, these guys just drive down to the Loch Ness every morning and it's like 4 degrees and go for a swim and soak in the scenery and stuff. It's just, definitely try that, I think.
Yeah.
Those that are listening and haven't tried it.
Yeah.
First thing in the morning, even if it's just a cold bath, you'd be surprised if you put the tap on the coldest, it's probably only going to be like 12 to 15 degrees. It's still freaking hard to get in.
Yeah. Absolute monsters of humans. So that's on your YouTube page. What's your best one? What's your favourite bit of content? We'll watch that. What's the most watched?
If you scroll down, you just add it there. If you go a little bit, tiny bit further down and keep going.
Oh, let's watch this one first.
I tell you what, you might as well show my Olympic routine.
If you
see there, that's the head-to-head gymnastics challenge, 27 million views. So that sort of content really took off for me with the young talent. So you can see here, like, this kid's 13 years
old.
Look
at your face.
They'd all beat me at these challenges. I didn't win a single challenge.
Oh, my word. So they are, what do you call it? Handstand press-ups? Is that what they're called?
Handstand push-ups, yeah. And again, like, these are strict. Look at your legs straight, head touching the ground.
My.
Like, CrossFitters are bouncing up and down. Like, how many have we done there? That was the, I think you must have done, like, 17 there. So 17 strict handstand push-ups at 13
and
years
not
old.
And he's not even sweating.
No. So like I've sort of tapped into a little bit of, knew that it would gather attention.
Wow. Did you think it would take off that much?
No, not a chance. Doing like 15 muscle-ups. This is a super viral moment. When he did the... So you got your laying flat, and then from that position, without having a sway or a swing, you have to press straight handstand. Do you know how difficult that is? And he just flew up like that.
Look at you, you're just like...
Unbelievable.
He's going somewhere, that kid, isn't he?
He's still currently training, he's on the squad, like, doing well.
How old is
doing
he?
Doing really well. Well, now that'll be 5 years ago, 6 years ago, so he'll be 18.
And what's his name, do you remember?
Simon Toussaint, he is.
So cool.
Showcasing young talent, like...
But that's what everyone's in, that's what they're into. Like, you're speaking to the next generation, like... Yeah. The Gen Z, who, like, let's be honest, they're not picking up books as much now. Like, they're looking for inspiration that way, and then they'll go and try it.
I think, yeah, as a thread with my content, I've always tried to, like, get people moving. You know, this whole wave of gamers, esports, sat in a chair all day. It's like, oh, no, it's not for me, man.
Exactly.
Come on.
Great.
Remember as a kid, you used to just go and play out.
Exactly.
Like, douche it, move your body, do sports, compete, think of some games to do, play moves. So it's like, I love the fact I'm still creating vlogs, and it'd probably be easier for my YouTube content career just to do like reaction stuff and sit in a chair and like do all this stuff. And it takes a lot more work to go out somewhere, to have a physical challenge, to do all this stuff. But I know deep down it's hopefully inspiring the next generation to still do sports and move and get active and try stuff. And that's what I'm super passionate about. That, well,
that's where YouTube is so good. Like, you look at like the shorts on my lads all over basketball, like NBA, and then it will look at the clips on there, then it'll go out and do them. So like, you're using it in a good way.
You're educating yourself. 100%. I used to do it all the time, like watch study. I've watched every single gymnastics video there ever was on YouTube back in like 2008, 2009. Like, study it, how they're doing it, what's it look like, imagine yourself doing it, visualize. It's a great tool, and you don't really, I probably put a lot of my success down to being able to do that without really realizing that I was doing it, because I was super obsessed. Just, but then what that watching is like reading a book.
Can you imagine how good some of these kids now with access to that are going to be?
But it's happening, mate. These kids are doing stuff at 11, 12 years old that I was training when I was like 17, 18. It's like, oof, the shift of where's the sport going to go. It's exciting.
And where the ceiling is. I listened to something as well recently around steroids in sport and whether or not they should have like a drug Olympics.
Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say this, but it'd be fascinating to see. I'd love to see it. What, particularly like on a sport, on a technical sport like gymnastics, what impact it would have on, you know, I don't know the science behind obviously steroid use, and but it's most commonly known in like bodybuilding, obviously, to aesthetically look a different way. You recover quicker, you build muscle quicker, your shape is different. But gymnast, you don't want to be big and heavy. So but what implication would it have? What would you get people, what would you get these strong men doing on rings? Like,
you'd be getting like Luke and Tom Stoltman, like literally jacked, holding 28 stone up on them.
I mean, they'll never do it, will they? But
I don't know.
Well,
they do it in bodybuilding.
I suppose they're getting two grown ass big fat men to slap each other in front of a big audience. So, I mean, it'd be more entertaining to watch.
Well, I guess, watching a sub 10, like a sub nine second, I guess, 100 like, meters.
What's the actual ceiling and limit to what the human body is like capable of?
Well, the argument was, I can't remember who the guy was, but he was talking, why would you not use science? Why would you not use everything at your disposal for human optimization? Which you see more, especially in America, a lot of people taking steroids or micro dosing in that space, you know, like mushrooms, bloody, they're all smoking weed now. They're topping themselves up with IV drips of vitamins. They do that in South Africa. They do that in rugby, like these kind of things. So this is something I'm interested in because as I'm aging, I'm tall, body's wrecked, you know, had a thyroidectomy, which is a hormone regulator. So looking of ways to be like, right, how do I feel optimal? And then using that in sport, like I'd watch it. You know,
100%. I guess it's just being decided that these certain things are not allowed to be used. It's like, well, you know, we do the stem cell now and the hyperbaric stuff. It's like, why aren't those illegal?
Natural, they would say, even though you do produce testosterone. I don't know enough about it. I just saw this guy. I was thinking, fucking be wild.
It would be. It'd be really interesting and exciting. And I mean, it's a shame that people do use it in sport that they're not allowed. It's, you know, that was one of the biggest fears to me. But towards the back end of my career, I actually stopped taking supplements altogether, just I guess from the sheer completely removing the risk of ever getting a contaminated supplement. Like, I just didn't want that risk there. The thought of, you know, you get a positive drugs test, it's just completely your life is over, all your reputation is completely tarnished, whether it was your fault or not, because there is stories and it is possible, and we get linked about it. You have to keep all the batch codes of all the supplements that you were using, and I just sort of got to the point where I was like, do you know what, I can get all this from my food, and I just want to remove that risk. And to be honest, probably the biggest game changer for what I found was sleep. If you slept well enough, you recover pretty freaking well. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, not everyone does that.
No, talking of that, I was in Colorado a few weeks ago and met Lance Armstrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So went to it. He does a podcast called The Move. So a mate of a mate knows him. So went to his studio in Aspen. Him, there's a guy called George Hincampe. This is probably before your time, but you know Lance's story,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So George Hincampe was his right-hand man, took the fall for him and stuff like that. But that was like, that's the biggest sports scandal.
Yeah.
One of the biggest scandals ever of my generation. And I'm in a podcast studio, not as nice as this, but a nice studio with him. And you could just, I don't know, maybe because it's there, but you know, there's just that thing that's always there. Like what he did, like what happened. And there's talk of him potentially coming in, and not that I'm going to quiz him. I think he'd completely out alpha me, you know, just be so dominant, but fucking wild story.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but yeah, you're right. You're a cheat.
Yeah.
You always will be. I'm sorry, man. That's you are a cheat.
And that's what it felt like, you know, even being there, and so much time has passed, but I imagine every single person that sees him for the first time, and as harsh as it sounds, like if he's going to school to drop his kid off and it's Lance Armstrong, you don't think one of the greatest athletes ever, which he probably is and was.
Yeah.
You just think,
look, but as well, by the way, I say that harshly. I'm sure he's an unbelievable human being, and like, you don't know what was motivating him back then. You don't know what systems were in place, why he made the decisions he's done. I've made a hell of a lot of bad decisions in my life and made a hell of a lot of mistakes, but just labeling that the moment you're a professional athlete and there's a positive drugs test, it's game over, man. Like, it doesn't matter what the situation was.
Well, his was worse as well, because like, it's interesting when I mentioned that your first thing is cheat, and as harsh as it is, that is the facts, but it's the way that he did it as well. Like, he was like a category, he was shouting at the journos. Like, I think it's Paul Kimmage was, he actually wrote a book for my mate, and I think he was the one, and David Walsh from the Times, and he's a fucking wrecking them in the media room conferences and stuff like that. That's why, I think that's why it just got so nasty.
You just hope that everyone's on as an athlete, in integrity and equality is such a huge value, and to know that sometimes you may be rocking up to a competition where it's imbalanced. Like Russia have, you know, I've seen Icarus, the documentary, I've witnessed certain things that it's just, it's not nice when you've dedicated your whole life to, you know, I've met some of the medalists that have been handed the medal 10 years later because they came fourth in Beijing. And then they've obviously redone a hell of a lot more drugs tests and testing them out and stuff. It's just like, that person is like, their life could have been so much fucking different because people wanted to take drugs and cheat. You know, it's just like, it's a tough part of sport, I guess, for sure.
Especially in the Olympics. Like, that's the one now. It's almost like the Tour de France. Like, if you speak to cycling purist fans, they don't want to watch that because it's so tarnished. And there's an element of that with the Olympics. Like, if you see someone do something unbelievable, like Usain Bolt, for example, like, there's loads of people that would be thinking, well, he's clearly taking drugs. Like, there's no way he can be that good. And he's saying he's eating chicken nuggets before the race.
Yeah. I guess, the Olympic sports is more, it's a lot more heightened in it, and it's more, you'll have your specific sports that are maybe used to it. Weightlifting's quite a big one. You know, the amount of positive tests in weightlifting has been astronomical versus gymnastics. I think there's probably been, you can count them on one hand over the last 30 to 50 years. Do you know what I mean? So, I've seen some things.
And in gymnastics, what would that affect? Was your sport wasn't tarnished by anything like that?
Never. I mean, like, look, the Russians were banned, and there was a Russian gymnast that had a positive test, but then still, that after the stories had all gone through, still competed like 3 months later, which didn't make sense to a lot of us. But like, you don't get it in gymnastics.
Because what would it affect? So if there was a Russian athlete, I'm trying to think. I know athletically, or trying to put on weight or strength or bulk.
Mate, it's nothing to do with, you would never ever use that for aesthetics. It's about recovery.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it was like for you training, but when my weekly schedule would be, you know, Monday, I'd be training 3 hours on a Monday, but that'd just be like body prep for the week. I've had a day off on Sunday, get your body moving. And Tuesday would be a 4 to 6 hour day double session where if a comp's coming up, I'd be hammering out my routines for that competition. I'd train again, Wednesday morning, I'd feel like I'd been hit by a bus, mate. Like, I could, like, absolutely fucked. So then Wednesday is a down day. You probably have one session, just active rest, but you're still training 2-3 hours. Then Thursday you go again. So you're having to do these peaks and troughs in your week because it's physically impossible at the level that you're training to just maintain healthily that level of work unless you have some help.
Mm.
So it wouldn't be about how you looked or like putting on size. It'd be like, well, to be honest, if I can recover that fast, I could do what I do on a Tuesday. I could do that Monday or Saturday, day in, day out, because I'm recovering.
Yeah, that's what it is. I think
that's what the game changer would be for sure. And I've seen some just some unbelievable output of work from like the Russian athletes, I guess. And it's just like, something not quite right there. Because I know physiology and I know what it's like to be at this level. Yeah, you're just bashing it out day in, day out. I'm like, wow.
I would have been fucking frightening on steroids, I tell you now. So much quicker. Right, let's finish off with another video. Why not? I've never had so many videos. Which one is your routine on here?
Yeah, if you type in Niall Wilson high bar, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to talk you through it?
Yeah, talk us through it. Yeah, 100%. So there you are.
It's been a while since
I Australia, 2018.
Australia, Gold Coast.
Oh, look, your eyes are all over the place.
I'm like Cristiano Ronaldo about to take a penalty. I was absolutely knackered at this point, by the way, because this was like the final apparatus and I'd done 2 all-round competitions, 4 finals. And I just remember thinking, I didn't warm up or anything. I was like, I need to conserve all my energy.
Loads of chalk.
As soon as you put your arm up, the adrenaline hits and then your body takes over. I miss it.
Are you not dizzy as anything or not? I mean, I know it's a stupid question, but
you don't feel it, mate. You get used to the feeling. High bar was definitely one of my specialities, and it's tough. You've got all them release and catch. So you go through a bit of a journey in these routines because, like, remember at the start, I've got to do 5 release and catch moves, and you're like, that's a mission. Once they're done, then you've got the intricate turns that you need to, in order to get high scores, like try and land in handstand, and then obviously up to the dismount, the shape and landing. I stuck that dead quite a few times when it mattered. I was always known for sticking my dismount, which was quite cool. But that feeling there, what we were talking about earlier.
And you,
10,000 people.
And you know, right?
Yeah, it's done deal, like gold medal.
Yeah, yeah.
So good. Dad going mental.
Oh, is that my dad, Australia?
Really, really cool feeling.
Yeah, look at the shape on you. Big neck, big arms, obviously. Who's that? The coach?
Coach Barry, yeah. Been through some amazing times. Do you know what? It's like that. That's the icing on the cake. That's the picture you paint. And in sport, that's your job. Like, my job's to make that look really easy.
But look at that view there. Gold Coast 2018, flashing in the background. What a shot.
That's cool, isn't it? Just managed to catch that one. Oh! That's the icing on the cake, and everyone screams and claps, and it's nice to stand. But I tell you what, there's a whole story behind every athlete's, I guess, moment. Lot of pain, a hell of a lot of pain.
Yeah.
A lot of ups and downs. You know, I lived in the gym, mate. I was training 30 hours a week from the age of 14, 15.
For that moment, though.
30 hours, yeah, well, yeah. I spent more time with my coach than I did with my dad. Mm. You know, like, you sacrificed everything. You missed parties. You didn't drink alcohol. You ate good food. It's just like, was it worth it?
Was it?
Definitely.
Yeah.
100 million percent worth it.
And that's the thing, you're a young man still, you know, it's just like, it's not a shame, but it came so young. And like, it goes back to the initial thing that we're talking about, like how, and it won't ever, you know, that feeling won't happen again for either. Well, you're still young. I mean,
maybe. I feel like I've got a bit more left in me, you know, Jim. I'm obsessed with golf, but like, I really want to, I still feel that I'm not quite done yet. I need, you know, like I can, I don't know what it is yet. I'm trying to find it and figure it out. Obviously, I'm not going to be on the PGA Tour. It's definitely, I'm down to 6 handicap now. And I've only played for 2 years. So, but that's the same thing, just that addicted, obsessed. Mm. But I still feel like I've got something left in the tank in some way, shape or form to...
Something physical.
Yeah, to compete at a high level at something. And I've tried making a few gymnastics comebacks, but every time I go in the gym and train for a little bit, it reminds me why I stopped, because of my neck. So I had like neck surgery in 2019 and damaged a lot of nerves. I know some of yourself and rugby boys will know what that's like. So I remember there's a reason why I retired, when it starts hurting again and flaring up. But I'd love to just compete in like my life, you know, just something to win and creating a moment where I do something cool. So yeah, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'm with
maybe
you.
Rugby. I think I've got the size for it.
Yeah, they're smaller now. Interesting. I had George Groves in here. Do you remember George Groves, boxer?
Yeah.
So he fought Carl Froch, famous one. So I've become quite pally with him. Done a bit of training with him, but he's only 32, and he had world title fights. And he's the opposite. Like, he's like just switched it off, got out of boxing,
done
like early. Had some massive fights, cognitively fine as well, didn't take much trauma. But I look at someone like that as well, like, but his spark has gone, he's blown up, put a bit of weight on, he's comfortable, made millions of pounds. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Maybe it's not all about the money, but he made millions of pounds. Like, unbelievable boxer. And I trained with him. Like, he got a gym down the road. I'm like, you want to see him hit the pads, as you could imagine, right? Hap, hap, the noise. You see, you
imagine your chin being on the end of one of
them. And I was like, mate, surely when you hit that, and he said, yeah, when I hit the pads, he's like, I can feel it. Like, you could just see, just a killer.
Yeah, yeah.
And inside. I was like, yeah. And so when you're talking about it, and he's, you know, we're doing a podcast about it, it's very different to when he's got his boots strapped up, his gloves laced up, and he's...
He's mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, you've still... And he said, yeah, when I move in the ring, and we were doing a bit in the ring and stuff like that, he was like, yeah.
You still got you never lose it. I realised that in the last few years. I've sort of kept relatively fit. I try and train for my mental well-being more than anything else. But when we go back in and do silly videos for content, or the other day we had a lads competition, young boys competition at Nahalson Gymnastics Rotherham, and I got back on the bar and did this certain release and catch move, and I had like a big crowd there and the parents, and God, I hadn't done it for 2 years, and I'm just thinking, God, this is quite big. I don't know if I should be able to do this. I said, I'll have three goes, and I missed it. I didn't catch all three, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I need to look after myself. And then they did something else, and I was like, do you know what, I cannot leave this building with all these people watching me and not having fucking caught this move. So I had the fourth go, and I caught it, and it was just like, it's like, and at that time I had to do it, and there was no other way that I was going to miss the bar. And it's just like, it's still inside you, that beast, that competitive animal that's just a performer as well, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'm searching for that. I don't know what it is. It can't be rugby. I played a charity game last year, got handed off in the chest by a good mate of mine, but he just retired. Talking to the next, handed me off in the chest, and my head went back and it nipped a nerve, and I had pins and needles in my feet, and I was like, literally.
What did
cemented.
What did if
so I that scar is from a thyroid taken out. I've got a pin in the rib there, but I've got C4, C5. Is that neck, is it?
Yeah.
No, L4, L5, and then C4, C5. I've got nothing there, but I've got a bulging disc.
Oh, you've got one now, yeah.
Yeah.
So I had C6, C5, 6 fused.
Yeah.
From the same thing. But I would ask you them.
Well, I remember you. I heard you talking
about
it. Were
you down at your foot? Or is that from your lower back?
Well, no, that one's from the neck. So, like, even if you look at me now, like, as in if I just sit there, you can see one of my traps is, like, much more, like, up than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nerve. There's a name for it. I don't know what it is. But, yeah, like, that C4, C5 is a very common injury. I've got loads of mates who've had surgery on that, like, bulging disc, shaved, or some of them have got bloody... like metal work and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I've got.
Together.
So I had the metal cage.
The cage, and that's the one.
The disc replacement put in, so then your spine fuses. But I was all down my arm and spine. But it's just...
The burning. Oh, it's
horrific, man. I remember the day that it hurt my disc, so it fully herniated. It's like pretty much tore and like popped out. It wasn't like a little bulge anymore. It was fucking gone. It was 2 weeks before that moment happened. So I was on the surgery table getting the fusion surgery, and in that 2 weeks I was in 8 to 10 out of 10 pain 24/7. Like, and as well, your neck holds your head on your shoulders. You, most of the time when you've got an injury, you can put your feet up and you want to lie down and rest. Like, sleeping is the worst thing. And I don't, you know what I mean? You sleep on the wrong way, like you can't get your head comfortable. And, you know, I think it was just because that disc was on a nerve, and like all down my arm, lost, you know, my pec collapsed, all this sort of stuff. Nasty work, nasty piece of work. Nerve damage isn't good.
No, it isn't.
At all. It's almost like you'd rather break. You find out in sports when you go through it, you want to break bones, man. You don't want to do it. Easy peasy, 6 weeks sorted, get crack back on.
Yeah.
Anything else, you know, like, and I think gymnastics is a hell of a lot of impact. And most of the guys, we're just joints, you know, ligaments.
Yeah.
Done my ankle, both wrists, surgery. And like you said, like the muscle tissue, that's the healthiest it's ever going to get for a human ever.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get any muscle tears or problems like that. You get soreness, but it's just the how long can your body last the impact of what we're doing, you know?
But it's like, it's funny you say, it's like whenever you got injured or whenever the kids get injured, oh, it's not broken. It's like, yeah, actually, you prefer it to be broken. I remember I dislocated my ankle. It was literally my toes were pointing around the back, and I went for a scan and went back and they were like, oh, you've not even broke it. I was like, no, I haven't broken it, but I've ruptured every ligament in the ankle. Like,
that's,
and I was
10 like, times worse. That's a year. Exactly. That's a year rehab.
Yeah. You'd much rather break stuff.
Did you have like systems in place for the players rehabbing?
Yeah.
Did you all have to go to like certain camps and or do you have your own individual program?
Well, it varied. I mean, the specialist ones which were out there were like knees. So there's a guy called Bill Knowles who was the best in the business, and he's got a kind of sanctuary over in America.
Right.
So he was like the knee man, but they never really found a shoulder man or woman to help you. Yeah. So shoulders are I'd say out of all the injuries that I've had, and I've had loads like broken legs, broken feet, dislocated ankles, nearly lost my eyelid reconstructed, fucking plate in my cheek, broken fingers, broken ribs, broken sternum, like torn patella tendon in my knee, medials gone.
Mate,
I'd say
I thought I had a bit pretty decent shopping list, bro.
I know, and this is the thing. It's like I will sell the sport forever, like in order, you know, like of all these things. But the worst things, shoulders, because you have to tackle.
Yeah,
and like I think when you injure a shoulder, they're just that one.
What was the most common, like your AC joint? Pain or like ligament?
No, it'd be like the rotator cuff in the middle. Yeah.
Cuff tears and stuff.
Cuff tears, yeah. And then
We get a lot of them. They're not nice.
No.
Get impingement and stuff as well, yeah.
Impingement.
Same thing, yeah.
They did all the rehab wrong as well. So when we were rehabbing, you do them kind of internal, like external. Yeah, they don't do that now.
Right.
Like, because you're aggravating in that position.
All right. Really?
So I'd be in rugby, and I was in these machines where you push against this machine, it'd be like, it's fucking...
It's killing me, aren't you?
Yeah, my shoulder's not in the right position. Anyway.
Were the cortisone injections rife with you guys?
Oh, well, I was watching... So they were rife when I was playing. It was cortisol, the steroid ones.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that is cortisol, like painkillers, big issue. And that's a big issue in rugby now. I was watching the England-Wales... because there's a World Cup around the corner, the interviews after, Warren Gatland, the head coach, is like, yeah, so-and-so's been jabbed last week, he should be all right, so-and-so's been jabbed, just willy-nilly. I was like, mate, I thought it was a secret, everyone getting jabbed, and now it's out there in public domain.
I had like 13, 14 in total. I mean, looking at it, it makes sense. You've got like a short-lived career, and like in that moment, you don't give a crap about the long-term implications of what the hell you're doing to yourself. It's just like, I want to win an Olympic medal, and you'd be like, I want to win a trophy and be the best player in the freaking league or whatever. You just crack on, but like looking back, it's not great. It's from either side, really. And I feel like now there's started to be a shift in more of like the care of athletes and mentally specifically. You talk about painkillers, I bet they were popping them out like Smarties, and you could just get its complete ease of access to anything that you wanted.
Yeah.
The challenge is you need them because you're in a fucking hell of a lot of pain. Mm. But then when do you cross the lines? Like I'm a super addictive personality. When do you cross... there's a grey area which is a bit blurred, which is like, well, am I now taking this codeine or whatever it may be because it's helping my career, or am I taking this because I feel good to help me sleep a little bit better? Or, you know, you've got to keep asking yourself those questions. I often find myself in scenarios where it's like, well, I'm continually taking these painkillers or whatever it, you know, like, or sleeping tablets or whatever it may be, and it's, I don't need them. Like,
yeah,
I want them.
That's where I mentioned my mate Ryan Caldwell. We're talking about, we had the clips up on screen, had him on, and that's where it started for him. Addiction, painkillers, sleeping tablets, and then into class A's straight after that, and really struggled to get off the opioids, which is a story for another day.
For sure, but, yeah. But like, I've had it with the codeine after my neck, and it feels great.
Yeah, it does.
It feels fucking good, man.
It does. It really does.
And you can get it like that if you want it.
Yeah. For people that want to reach out or get in contact, for the millions of my listeners and stuff, but I know that you're well established in that space, but for people that haven't heard you, there'll be a load of new people that haven't.
Yeah, just get me on Instagram, Niall Wilson, N-I-L-E, like the river.
Yeah.
Check out my stuff. I think everybody in this planet should be a gymnast in some way, shape or form. Jim, we're going to definitely get you doing a backflip. We could do that. You've no excuses with Tom and Luke showing you that they can do it. So every child on this earth should do gymnastics. So look out for the, hopefully the big movement we're going to create with our business, and, you know, hopefully give as many kids as possible access to be able to join in what I believe is the most incredible sport in the world. And Jim, thanks for having me on, mate. It's been a pleasure.
It's been absolutely amazing. Where are the centres? You said one in Manchester.
We've got, at the moment we have got Leeds, Rotherham, Mansfield and Coventry.
I'm from Coventry, so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That in the next 5 to 10 years will double, treble. We'll be, our team is on it.
Yeah.
So we're trying to scatter ourselves across the whole country and be the biggest supplier in the world for gymnastics.
Unreal. Niall Wilson, mate. Awesome, mate.
Cheers, brother.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.